Okay, all right, I got that web address for you because that's what I do. For the Tavar translation, I'm going to show you that in a second. I think it's more accurate than the Concordant version. Now, it's not as readable. So it's kind of, this is what it is. It's a cross between the Concordant Greek text. I think that's as literal as you can get. That was also done by A.E. Nock, published by the Concordant Publishing Concern. It's called the Concordant Greek Text. It's a sublinear. It's got the actual Greek letters on it and the English equivalents underneath. So it's really unreadable because it's literal as you can get. Now, the Concordant version is readable. Thus, it's a version. And yet, because of idiom, because of adjusting for English idiom and making something readable, there are some, inconsistencies. But you can check on those because it has a concordance in the back. But it's still translated with a system. But this, the Tavar translation, which I'm showing you on the Zendercam, also called the Rit, but known as the Tavar. And the Tavar is Hebrew for word, I think, yeah. This is more consistent, but it's a little less readable. But I like it, and I use it in conjunction with the Concordant version. So this is where how you request this. And apparently they don't cost anything. I know it's weird. ArtKerber@gmail.com, the guy's in Canada. And I hope he doesn't, you know, get mad at me giving out his email address. But he put it out there so that people could get this version. He's the distributor. His name's in here. He was associated somehow with F.H. Bader, who was the compiler, the translator. His name's Art Kerber, ArtKerber. You can contact him, ArtKerber@gmail.com. Last I heard, they were out of the Hebrew scriptures, but you can get Volume 2, which is the New Testament. All right, that's the most important book for you anyway, because that's where Paul's letters are. Write him and request it. And he doesn't take money, last I checked. I don't know how this happens, but it does. Nebuchadnezzar, last we left him, here was a prophecy concerning him. We're in Secrets in Daniel, Part 50, and this is the last part of Secrets in Daniel, a series that started in sunny South Florida at Broward College in Davie, Florida, near Fort Lauderdale. Anyway, verse 28 of, I forget the chapter when, verse 28 of, I think it's Daniel 4, right? Somebody help me here. Nobody's helping me here. Let's just say chapter 4. Yes, chapter 4, verse 28. All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar when, at the end of 12 months, he is going about on the royal palace of Babylon. Now remember, Daniel had already prophesied to him what was going to happen to him if he didn't behave himself. Well, he didn't behave himself. And now, 12 months later, he's forgotten about this prophecy. And so now he's strutting upon his parapet. At the end of 12 months, he is going about on the royal palace of Babylon. He's looking out over his kingdom. Responding is the king to all this by saying, and I'm going to try to do my best Babylonian accent here. This is how I believe Nebuchadnezzar, no, this is how Nebuchadnezzar sounded. I have insight into these things.
Is this not Babylon the Great, that I have built to be the house of the kingdom within the might of my safeguarding walls for the esteem of my honor?
He always said my like that.
Why?
He never said my. Now, that would be normal. But if you're the king of the world,
why?
Is this my dinner? You know, when his wife brought his slippers.
Are these my slippers? Is this not my kingdom that I have built for the esteem of my grandeur,
so I mean, my honor? So that's what he did. And now, while the matter is still in the mouth of the king, a voice falls from heaven. Now, this voice was much different than Nebuchadnezzar's. This was the voice that told him that he was in big trouble. It was the voice of a messenger, and it was very subtle. I mean, it said this was the voice of the messenger. This is literally the voice of the messenger. To you are they saying, King Nebuchadnezzar. I have insight into this. The messenger that came to Nebuchadnezzar sounded like Woody Allen. But it's the other way around, because actually Woody Allen miraculously sounds like this messenger. To you are they saying, King Nebuchadnezzar, the kingdom passes away from you. From mortals are they shoving you. I'm sorry, you know, I mean,
I didn't invent this. Of course, you know, they're going to shove you from mortals. What am I supposed to do about it? And with the animals of the field, you're gonna live. You're gonna have your abode with the animals of the field. You're gonna eat herbage, greens. I don't know, like cabbage, lettuce, kale. I don't know what they have in Babylon. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't know. And seven seasons are gonna pass over. Not five. Not eight. No, it's seven. Yeah, precisely seven seasons, until you know that. Something that I don't even know. The supreme. I'm sorry, I was doing Woody Allen, but this is the messenger. The messenger knows this. The supreme. He's authority in the kingdom of the mortals, and whoever he wants to give it, that's who he's giving it to. All right, that was the messenger. In the same hour, the declaration gathered on Nebuchadnezzar. That means it happened. That's a nice way of saying it. What happened? Well, the declaration gathered upon our boss. Oh. Is that why he's out in the field naked, eating herbage, and his nails are now 25 inches long? Yeah. From mortals is he shoved, herbage is he eating, as oxen, and the night mists of the heavens is streaking his frame till the hair increased as vulture's feathers, and his claws are as those of birds. That's not good. I'm not making fun of it. I am. Well, yeah, I guess I am. But he's dead now, and he's not worried about it. So I apologize to his descendants, any who are alive, the descendants of Nebuchadnezzar. All right, now, seven seasons, and I think this is 7 years. That seems like a crazy long time, but it corresponds to the 7 years of the tribulation when the earth is going to have a Nebuchadnezzar experience. This is one of the secrets of Daniel. Seven is a time of trial. 7 years, that is. And actually, the last 3.5 years. Seven is a number of perfection, actually. So seven means that when God brings you a trial, it has proper result. It's perfect. The trial is perfect. How's that? And now we're in 34, verse 34 of Daniel 7. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to the heavens, and my knowledge is returning to me. Knowledge belongs to salvation. I'm sorry, I'm not apologizing, but I am. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry at the same time, because knowledge belongs to salvation. Light before fruit. I came to knowledge, and my knowledge is returning to me. Then I blessed the Supreme. Yeah, then I blessed the Supreme. And the world is going to come to this. And we all individually come to this. I blessed the Supreme, and I lauded and honored him who is living for the eon, seeing that his jurisdiction is an aeonian jurisdiction, and his kingdom is with generation after generation. I told you how smart Nebuchadnezzar got. He's smarter than the preterists here, because the preterists don't even believe that Jesus' kingdom is an aeonian kingdom, because he's not even going to have a kingdom, or God's kingdom, the kingdom that comes via Jesus Christ, the millennium. Even Nebuchadnezzar recognized that God would have a kingdom run by Jesus Christ on this earth, and it's an aeonian kingdom. The preterists don't even realize that. They think God's done with Israel. They think that the kingdom is spiritual, in that it's not visible. No, it's visible and spiritual at the same time. Spiritual things can also be visible. Don't make the common mistake that spiritual means ethereal. It doesn't, because the vessels in the tabernacle, the temple, were spiritual, and they were holy. They were set apart by God. So, listen to this. Christians don't know this. Verse 35. All abiding on the earth are reckoned as naught. All abiding on earth are reckoned as naught. Well, that's not true, because 8 billion people have a free will, according to Christians. How can all on earth be accounted as naught? Like they're nothing, they don't count. How can they not count when they're each their own sovereign? And they can not only go against the will of God, but they can trump the will of God. Because God wills all mankind to be saved, come to a realization of the truth, 1 Timothy 2:6. But if a human wills otherwise, then we have a clash of the wills, and guess which will wins? The human will trumps God's will. If a human doesn't want to be saved, it doesn't matter. If God wants them to be saved, in the battle of the wills, the human wins. Nebuchadnezzar was smarter than Christians. All abiding on earth are reckoned as naught, nothing. There's only one free will in the universe, and it's God's. According to his will is he doing in the army of the heavens and with those abiding on the earth. That's the thing Nebuchadnezzar said that Christians can't say. according to his will, capital H, is he doing in the army of the heavens and with those abiding on the earth? Christians don't believe that because they believe that there are billions of free wills in the universe. I don't believe in free will. That's the damning word in the phrase free will. It's not the word will because we will to do things every day, but they're not free. They're controlled from without. By who? By God. And there's only one free will in the universe, and that is God's. And it's according to his will that he's doing among the inhabitants of the earth. Christians can't believe this. That is those who believe in free will, because they have 8 billion free wills clashing against the divine free will. How can God do his will if a human being with a free will desires otherwise? If that will is truly free, then that person could truly resist God's intention. And no one will actually clap with his hands and say to him, "What doest thou?" Remember James Earl Jones in Field of Dreams? He does this little clap thing with his hands. No one will say, "What doest thou?" Oh, but everybody says that. God, what are you doing? Why'd you make me this way? Why are you doing this? Why don't you do this? Why don't you stop evil? Why don't you... But Nebuchadnezzar, because of his humbling, had to come to a realization that God knew what he was doing. And I say that this realization is yet future for most of Christianity and for definitely the world and the earth and those who are unbelievers now. But that includes Christians. They're unbelievers. I'm telling you, Christians are unbelievers. In verse 36, "In the state of time, my knowledge is returning to me. For the esteem of my kingdom, my honor, my aspect is returning to me." And like now it's coming with wisdom. Oh, that Christians could be broken down and come to see and have their wisdom restored to them, if they ever had any at all. Or that God would give them for the first time a wisdom and a knowledge of his ways, of his plans for humanity, that he has a good plan. He's going to reconcile all creation to himself through the blood of the cross. And there's only room in the universe for one will, and it's his. And not only the world, but Christianity has to come to this Nebuchadnezzar experience, only at the end of which will they receive knowledge of the truth about God.